Let's talk to Paul, who's listening in Tokyo for reals. Hi, Paul.
For real. I'm here for real. And you know something, before I get into the topic here, you got to talk to your agent because this is the largest city in the world and you're in drive time evening rush hour. You got to get paid more.
I'm so thrilled that you're joining us in Tokyo. Thank you.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Monday in the rear view mirror. It was a rough one for me, all out of my regular routine. Princess Leia is still in the shop. It was hot. I didn't sleep well. I'm complaining, and thank you for allowing me my 30 seconds to vent. But for all those reasons and more, I did yawn on the air last hour, and I will continue to apologize for that. If you missed it, I'm quite certain it's preserved in the podcast, so feel free to check that out on your own time. However, despite that dubious moment that I may never live down, I mean, when I do yawn or when I have yawned in the past, I'm not telling you I've never yawned on the air before. No one's ever heard me. I've been able to mask it. I've been able to cover it up. No, not this time. Mid-word, there was nothing I could do. The yawn caught me by surprise. But despite that and how much I do yawn because of navigating overnights, overnight, late night, second shift, third shifter, stand-up, that's not my Olympic sport. Need you to fill in the blank. If this were an Olympic sport, I would capture gold every time. Your answers are cracking me up. I just retweeted at A-Law Radio, and you're finding the thread on Facebook without any trouble, as you always do. Christine on FB, identifying has-been celebrities in pictures. That's good, because I sometimes can't pinpoint their names or remember what they starred in. Jason, right below Christine on Facebook, impersonating George W. Bush. If impersonating George W. Bush, that's President George W. Bush to you. If impersonating the former president were an Olympic sport, I would capture gold every time. I gotta agree with this one from Zach. If taking naps were an Olympic sport, I would be the GOAT. And then James goes with playing pinball, which is really funny as well. So those are a sample of your answers on Facebook. Our friend Jerry Palm, who is well into the college football season already, getting prepared for it, he says, if sarcasm were an Olympic sport, that's so true. Knowing Jerry personally, he would absolutely capture gold every time. Larry goes with bocce. Janice goes with eating. Brian says, annoying my missus. Who calls it the missus anymore? I don't think I've been referred to that way yet. Andy, eating cannolis. Ken, cat wrangling. Isn't herding cats an oxymoron? I think that's the idea. So good morning to you. If what were an Olympic sport, you would capture gold every time. Either one of our sites online and then also on our phone lines, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. Now we're going to get to some Major League Baseball as well as a little more football. Harrison Butker becomes the richest kicker in NFL history. And in addition to that, a little more of an update on Geno Smith and a couple of other injuries for training camp. Though, I got to say, in the shadow of the Olympics in Paris, especially Simone Biles and Jordan Chiles and Team USA wrapping up its final day on Monday, training camp has taken a bit of a back seat. It's about to change. We do have the team finals that happen all this week in a bunch of the different sports like basketball and soccer. Obviously, have track and field all the way through the week. Noah Lyles has qualified for the final in the 200 meters after declaring himself and earning the title of fastest human on the planet. So a lot of the big races are still to come, the sprinting. It's not as though the Olympics are over, but the highest profile events outside of, say, all the NBA players in hoops, gymnastics, swimming, the 100 meters on the track for both the men and the women. And so football will kind of insert itself into the conversation a little more this week as we head into the first full week of preseason. So we're preparing for that. From football, the biggest news is that Brandon Ayuk is, for lack of a better term, holding multiple franchises in the NFL hostage right now. He's not practicing, though he is with the Niners, a little more of the hold-in Jordan Love style. He's indicated that he wants a new contract, but he's been unclear about his priorities. So if you go back to his podcast, not his podcast, but the podcast appearance he did with The Pivot about a month ago, what we heard from him was a discussion about value and wanting to be valued, treated like, aka paid as though he is the top wide receiver in football.
And I just want to move forward. I want to a team to look at me and value me as a top receiver. So I can go out there and continue to do what I do and show them every single day the same way that I have, as I've been, that's in fact what I am.
It was somewhat cryptic, but we know that he was unhappy with the lack of progress in negotiations with the Niners in wanting to get a new contract, getting his first big payday following this rookie deal. He's only under contract through 2024. So this is pretty standard. It's not as though it's some crazy stunt he's pulling, and he is still with the team. The issue is that he hasn't yet made up his mind. So what we're finding out is that the Niners do have terms in place with multiple teams out there, though the Steelers and the Commanders are peace out. There are teams that are waiting to find out if Brandon Ayuk will pick them. Or will he stay? We're going to get the latest details as of late last night from Bay Area insider Jennifer Lee Chan. She covers the Niners, have been with them for over a decade. We'll bring back part of that conversation because she calls this the most bizarre situation she's ever covered in her time in the NFL. So that's about 15 minutes from now. You'll hear what Jennifer has to say. As again, multiple teams in the AFC are waiting to find out if Brandon will choose a trade to join them. And if you don't know who the teams are, well, it's coming up. But one's in the AFC East and one's in the AFC North. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. If you missed it, late last night, Freddie Freeman returned to the Dodgers lineup. And as much as he's a former MVP and a big piece of their offense, the story around Freddie's return was not anything to do with baseball, really, just that he's now back with his team and gets that support system. The fans were thrilled to welcome him back. He got hugs from competitors like Bryce Harper when he got on base. There was a standing ovation from the fans who had been missing their guy, Freddie.
Dodger Stadium rising to its feet to welcome back number five.
Freddie Freeman.
Garrett Stubbs, the Phillies catcher, just gave Freeman a big hug. Freddie has stepped out of the batter's box, taken off his helmet, tipped it to the fans at Dodger Stadium, and tapped his heart. And you can tell that Freddie, never afraid to show his emotions and wear them on his sleeves. He's feeling them again right now. The entire Philly defense is facing Freddie Freeman. This is the good stuff.
Freddie Freeman broke down in tears when he walked into the locker room today. Every locker had a blue shirt with his son's name Maximus on the front, Freeman on the back with number 5. It touched him dearly.
Max Strong, those t-shirts red. Now Garrett Stubbs and the Phillies deserve a lot of credit for what we just saw.
Bear with me. This is, you guys know I'm an emotional person, so I'm probably not going to make this through. But Max is, he's doing all right. We came home Saturday night from the ICU. So we started PT yesterday, and let me tell you, he hates that. he's doing okay. His personality's back. He's Max. He's doing good in that aspect. But he's got to relearn how to do pretty much everything. Terrible syndrome. Guillain-Barré. He's doing okay. He's on his way to being better.
Freddie Freeman went on for about 30 minutes with reporters as he talked about how tough it's been for his son, Max, as well as for the family. And there are multiple other kids. If you see the photos out there, some of them in the hospital. His son's only 3, and he gives you the name of the disorder. It's a rare neurological disorder. And while they do expect him to recover fully, it is going to be a long road for his youngest kiddo. And the emotion, he's got a towel and he's mopping tears off of his face, which I appreciate humans who are okay in expressing their emotions. But even if you are the hardest of souls and you're really terrific at concealing your emotions, both the highs and the lows, when we're talking about a 3-year-old son, even if you're a stoic man or woman, that can often reduce you to tears when it's someone that is so vulnerable and so little and is left in such a tough position. And so Max is doing better. That's great, but really hard on the family. And to have to go through this the last couple of weeks with all the fears and the anxiety and the stress and the grief and the all of that, you can understand why maybe baseball is a bit of a relief for him in returning. And yeah, just awesome that the Dodgers are wearing Max Strong t-shirts. And it wasn't just the Dodgers. The Phillies were standing up. They were certainly welcoming him back to the field, letting him know they care about him more than just as an opponent. You can hear all of that described on Dodgers radio. But there were a lot of other teams that reached out to him as well personally to let him know that he wasn't forgotten.
I want to give a shout out to Pat Murphy and his staff. They actually sent a whole video to us and my family about how they were praying for us and wishing us well.
He actually said that after the standing ovation and thinking about everything that's been going on, that he had a really hard time standing in the batter's box that first AB because he's crying. He said, quote, "When you're crying on a Major League Baseball field, it's really hard to hit a pitch that's coming. I can imagine." And yet he is among the best in the business. So welcome back to Freddie Freeman. And of course, lots of people still thinking of Max and praying for him. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. If blank were an Olympic sport, I would capture gold every time. Bobby in Texas.
Eating French toast.
Eating what?
Eating French toast.
French toast. Okay, that's not what I expected from Texas.
I love French toast. And I've never had bad French toast. When I was little, my mom used to make it up because she was a working single mom. Huh. She'd make a batch of French toast for the week for breakfast before
nice.
School.
Yeah.
It'd be gone Tuesday.
So this is something that you've been working on your entire life, and now you're ready to win gold.
Yes, I've been in training, Amy.
I like it. Well, that's a great answer. As long as it's pure maple syrup.
Well, I have variations, but I do love maple, yes, and it has to be pure, the good stuff.
Yeah, none of that cheap stuff. Not for a gold medal winner.
No.
All right, good to talk to you, Bobby. Thanks so much.
Wait. I wanted to talk to you about the Olympics real quick.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Okay. Well, it was, I think of you about this with your mom. But anyway, I'm watching the Olympics when I can with my mom. She's 96 years old.
Oh.
And we were watching the Jordan Chiles, you know, issue. But we were so into that beforehand because the one that was in third place got knocked out by one that came up and knocked her down to fourth place. And so basically the one that was going to win the bronze wouldn't have won it if they didn't deduct the points from the one in fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed the review of that. She didn't go out of bounds. And we were just like, well, that's not fair. And wasn't. And then all of a sudden, the whole problem and controversy was solved. The inquiry for Jordan Child, and boom, she got bronze. It was amazing. But the drama beforehand,
right?
Must have been with all the people watching. And I'm sorry, I don't know the girl's name. But the one that lost, I hope their coaches explain, well, you know, you did win, but you really didn't deserve to win.
I'm not sure that's the best approach to take when a young girl is crying over her loss in the Olympics.
No, maybe wait a few days and have some French toast.
There you go. thank you, Bobby, and I'm so glad you're enjoying the Olympics with your 96-year-old mom. That's amazing.
Oh, I've been listening to you forever, and I've wanted to call lots of times, but I don't call radio stations. This is like my second time in 6 years. There was a country of sports shows, you'd be the president.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, you tell your mom if she ever feels like she needs some new entertainment that she can listen to our show on podcast. She might enjoy it.
Oh, okay. I just got her into an iPad, so she's moving into the modern technology.
Perfect. I love that, Bobby. Good to talk to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Mark is in Boston. Mark, and welcome to After Hours.
Hey, good morning, Amy. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So I just want to let you know, being born and raised in Boston and growing up a Yankee fan my whole life,
and I'm still
alive, your husband doesn't have to worry about wearing a Houston hat.
I'll tell him that. So do you proudly sport your Yankees gear when you're walking around downtown?
Absolutely.
Look at you. How brave you are.
You know what? It brings healthy fun and ribbing and ragging on each other, but no violence.
I was going to say, have you ever been hit by anything, something flying at you accidentally?
Well, there's been a couple of times I've been to Red Sox-Yankees games at Fenway, and let's just say I can't say the stuff on the radio.
No, you cannot.
It's been said to me, but no physical violence yet.
That's impressive. I've actually been to a few games at Fenway and at Yankee Stadium where fights broke out in the bleachers between Red Sox and Yankees fans. And maybe this was going back a few years where it was slightly more competitive and a little more fiery. But yeah, there definitely
exactly
have been fights.
That's exactly where I was sitting, in the bleachers.
Yep. Good for you. I am impressed that you are going to express yourself regardless.
I love my Yankees, and I bleed pinstripe.
If bleeding pinstripes were an Olympic sport, you would capture gold every time.
Absolutely.
All right, Mark, good to talk to you.
You too, Amy.
It's a Tuesday morning, and it's never a bad time to talk about rivalries. If blank were an Olympic sport, you would capture gold every time. On Twix, Rob goes with voice impressions. I like this one from Neva. We'll call him Nevar. I don't know. It's a Twix handle, so who knows? Song recognition. Is that a twist on the old Name That Tune game show? Yeah, I can name that tune in three notes.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the name of the show? It's called
Name That Tune?
Or Name the Song or something.
I feel like that might have been way before your time, Nick.
No, but there is a new show now. Like, it's where you hear, like, a few chords of the beginning of the song, and then you have to guess the song.
Yes.
I'm not sure if they still have it, but I've seen it pretty recently.
That's a lot of fun. It depends on what genre for me, but certainly there are some, like, country, a few others where I could name. In fact, Candace on Twix goes with the same thing. If 80s song lyrics were an Olympic sport, I would capture gold every time. Nohemi goes with pickleball. That's too much like a sport. In fact, they're going to add it to the Olympics. How much you want to bet they're soon going to add pickleball to the Olympics? Another one, singing in the shower. Let's see. Another one is pontoon captaining. That word sounds awkward. Captaining. Pontoon captaining.
What's that?
Well, it's a pontoon boat. You captain a pontoon boat. It just sounds awkward. Mm-hmm. But maybe he's just trying to fill in the blank with the right semantics. Eric says, if turning around to walk back in the house because I forgot something was an Olympic sport.
That's a good one.
Yes. Keith goes with parallel parking. Rush goes with fly swatting. Chris is one of the many who said procrastinating. Mike goes with eating pizza. I love this one as well, and I have no idea what the name is on the account, but buying the dip, meaning go to a party, go to a family get-together, go to a barbecue, you're the one who buys the dip. And then James goes with eating barbecue ribs. Fantastic. So you can find us online at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. Straight ahead, the latest details on Brandon Ayuk. Will he stay or will he leave the Bay Area? And why is it his decision? Glad to have you with us. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Like I said, I'm a true ex. People say system. I'm in Kyle Shanahan's system now, but if you watch any of the catches that I'm getting, I'm beating guys in front of me. I'm beating man covers to get my receptions. I'm not settling in zones. I'm not, or maybe sometimes, but I'm not running across the field, running cross routes or shallow crosses. I'm beating guys in front of me to get the football.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Brandon Ayuk, about a month ago, talking about thriving in any system. Cryptic, a little unclear. What does that mean? What does he want? Well, a lot of people are waiting to find out. Late last night, had a chance to catch up with Jennifer Lee Chan, who is a longtime Niners insider from NBC Sports in the Bay Area. Joined us after hours with Amy Lawrence. And we had to get the latest because we heard all kinds of rumors and speculation from Monday about the future of Brandon Ayuk. So I wanted to get it directly from her in the Bay Area.
My colleague Matt Mayoko did find out that there are trade formats in place for Brandon Ayuk to either go to the Cleveland Browns or to go to the New England Patriots. The ball is in Brandon Ayuk's court, and he has not made a decision on whether he is going to go to either of those teams or if he's going to stay with the 49ers. So it's all up in the air, and it's really all up to Brandon Ayuk. I mean, the two teams have agreed to terms, and it's just up to him to either sign the contract or say he's staying with the 49ers. It is the most bizarre thing I have witnessed since I started covering the team.
And why is that? How did it get to this point?
Listening to him on the Pivot podcast, he was kind of all over the board. He was like, yes, I want to stay with the 49ers. It's the best place for me. No, if it means that I have to leave to make, you know, the most money as the top wide receiver in the league, then I'm going to leave. He was all over the board. Yes, this is the best place for me. Kyle Shanahan is the best coach. No, I'm going to leave because I want to play with his college quarterback. He wants to play with the Steelers. He wants to play with the Commanders. But now that they're not on the table anymore. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are out. Washington Commanders are out. Because ultimately, if the 49ers are going to deal Brandon Ayuk, they want to get a player in place because they are primed for going back to the postseason. Trading away Brandon Ayuk and not getting anything in return other than draft picks really hurts their prospects. So they've got young wide receivers on the roster, but it hurts their prospects. So they want to get a player in return. So the terms are with the Browns. If Brandon Ayuk decides to go there, the Browns would trade Amari Cooper in his place. Now, the Patriots, you know, for them, they would trade back. I think what it would be is Kendrick Bourne would come back to the 49ers. Now, he's coming off an ACL, so they would have to trade a little bit more draft picks than the Cleveland Browns. But all of these things are in place. And I would think if Brandon Ayuk wants to play with those teams, he would already have signed and gone.
As best you can tell, what is his primary motivation?
It's hard to say. I think he's got to make a choice of whether he wants to stay with the 49ers and maybe play for another Super Bowl, because his chances of going to the Browns or the Patriots, I think, are, you know, a lot less that he'll play in the postseason if he goes there. And then also there's the pressure of, like, okay, if he goes to the Patriots or the Browns, he is the guy. He is wide receiver one. Now, he is wide receiver 1A, 1B with Deebo Samuel. And, like, you've got Christian McCaffrey. You've got George Kittle. You've got Kyle Juszczyk. You've got this star-studded team. When you go to those other teams, if he goes to the Patriots or the Browns, he is the guy. Everyone will be looking at him to be making the plays. I mean, he's obviously capable. But he's also losing time right now. He's not in their system. He's not in training camp learning the timing of the quarterbacks or the verbiage of the system. So he's losing time every day that he doesn't decide to go or whether he decides to stay. It's a crazy situation. And really, I would think if I was in his shoes, I'd be like, okay, if the 49ers make it to the Super Bowl and I'm with the Browns, I've got a lot of FOMO. because I could have been there, right? For a little, maybe a little less money. But how often do you go to the Super Bowl on a team? I mean, like, it's really hard for a team to make it that far. So I'm sure all of those things are weighing on his mind.
Jennifer Lee Chan is with us even as the news is unfolding about Brandon Ayuk and the San Francisco 49ers. And she covers the team now for over a decade for NBC Sports in the Bay Area. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Forgive me if this is the wrong way to characterize it. It seemed as though the Niners were dug in. Why did they cave on Ayuk and giving him a trade if that's what he wanted?
They were almost agreed. I mean, he said it on the Pivot podcast. He was getting his suit on. He was ready to go. And then, you know, they had a deal in place and then they didn't. So I don't know whether his demands are more than what they can handle. I mean, they do have to pay Brock Purdy next year. They did re-up Christian McCaffrey. They have Trent Williams that's holding out. So there's a lot of balls in the air for the 49ers. So I don't know how much they can give to Brandon Ayuk in this situation. I would think that maybe there's still a deal on the table, but you know, at one point they were really close to getting it done. And then I think it was Brandon Ayuk that said, no, I don't think that's what I want.
Exactly. It's interesting because you don't generally have a team that's willing to wait like this for a player to figure out what he wants. As best you can tell, are the Niners just going to wait it out?
I think they would love to have him on the team, and really they can't do anything. I mean, you know, they can agree to the trade with the Browns, but Brandon Ayuk has to agree to sign the contract, because if they trade him, he's only under contract for 2024. So without a long-term deal in place, that would not be ideal for the Cleveland Browns. So if he doesn't sign a long-term contract with the Browns, they aren't going to go through with the trade. So all of these pieces have to be in place for it to actually go through. So it really is all on Brandon Ayuk right now, whether he decides if he's going to play for the Patriots or the Browns, or if he's willing to, like, reopen the negotiations with the 49ers to stay. And, you know, I would think that the 49ers know that paying Brandon Ayuk $14 million is underpaying him. So I would think if they, you know, want to keep him for this year, the 2024 season, I would think that they would put together a package that says, okay, if you hit these markers, you're going to be incentivized to, you know, up in the $20 million mark for this 1 year. Then they can always franchise tag him for the next year and then figure out a trade. I don't think they're asking him to play in 2024 for $14 million. Also, he has to play somewhere this year. I mean, $14 million also is more than he's made in his past four seasons with the club. So this is his biggest payday. So I would think there's some, you know, the team was willing to work with him to a certain extent. But, you know, when it gets to the point when it's those high 20s, $28 to $30 million, I don't know if they can do it just because of the situation they're in with all the other contracts that they have.
Right. If, in fact, he's not a part of the roster in 24, what do they lose without Ayuk?
I mean, he's been such a reliable target for Brock Purdy. They're on the same page, and he's been there. And, you know, it's also a guy that Kyle Shanahan has worked so hard to get to where he is. I mean, he really is a product of Kyle Shanahan. So he had his rookie year was 2020. It was the COVID year. He was kind of thrown into it because Debo Samuel was hurt. And so he had a decent year. It wasn't amazing, but I think he thought that was it. He was going to automatically be the starter. So then he came back in his second year. You know, he was in the doghouse with Kyle Shanahan, and then he finally kind of turned it around. And so the second half of his second year, third year and fourth year, he's really been, you know, a vital part of the offense. You know, he is a really good route runner. I mean, he does stuff that no one else on the team does. You know, Juwan Jennings is kind of like the power guy. He's the third down guy. Debo Samuel is the guy that can, you know, also run jet sweeps. That's not what Brandon Ayuk does. He's more finesse. I mean, he's the one guy who's a finesse route runner on the team. So, I mean, they have a rookie in Ricky Pearsall, but he's not to the level of Brandon Ayuk, not yet anyways.
Jennifer Lee Chan of NBC Sports Bay Area with the latest on Brandon Ayuk. And yes, it's a fluid situation. She calls it the craziest thing she's covered in her career as a beat reporter and insider for this team. Now, there's more with her. We talked about the Trent Williams situation. He's holding out. Well, Ayuk's holding in. Williams is holding out. Plus, Brock Purdy going through a full training camp for the first time since he was drafted as Mr. Irrelevant. So did not get the snaps, of course, when he was a rookie in training camp. That job belonged to Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance. Last year was injured, and so here he is able to go through the full offseason program. What does that mean for him? We also talked about the new defensive coordinator who got promoted from within. So a lot of good stuff there with Jennifer. And you can catch that conversation on podcast. The link will be available on our social, or you can just Google it. Actually, I can't get into that right now. We'll get into it another time. I feel like if I go on off a Google tangent, then I'll get lost and trapped down a rabbit hole, and we've got stuff to do before the end of the show. There is a new richest kicker in the NFL, and wrapping up gymnastics, Simone Biles, oh yeah, she's definitely the GOAT, but there was all kinds of drama to wrap this portion of the Olympics in Paris. If blank were an Olympic sport, you would capture gold every time. A-Law Radio on our Facebook page. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Why don't you hit me with your best shot?
Placement is down. Butker's kick. It is up. Nailed it! 6 made field goals by Harrison Butker. At 2:59 to go in the game, that is a career high for Harrison Butker.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Mitch Holtis on Chiefs Radio, and the Chiefs believe that Harrison Butker is worth every penny. I don't know if this annoys people who don't like his views on families, any views that he espoused in his address to a college graduation earlier in the year. The Chiefs don't care, and nor should they. It's okay if we disagree with one another. We don't all have to share the same beliefs to be able to work together, and his beliefs have nothing to do with whether or not he can nail a game-winning kick. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Harrison Butker, the NFL's highest-paid footy. No. Highest-paid kicker. If kicking were an Olympic sport, this kind of kicking. American football kicking, if it were an Olympic sport, I think Harrison Butker would be a solid gold medal choice. 4 years, $25.6 million. Man, even kickers are expensive these days. Nearly $18 million guaranteed. He'll make more than the previously highest paid Justin Tucker money and Jake Elliott. Now, those guys, I can't believe we got to this point where we're talking about the average that kickers make in an NFL season. That's supposed to be something we reserve for quarterbacks, but it's become quarterbacks and offensive linemen and wide receivers and running backs, and now kickers. So Justin Tucker, Jake Elliott, step aside. Harrison Butker is, in fact, the highest paid at your position. And I'm not sure who asked Evan McPherson of the Cincinnati Bengals about Harrison Butker, but the question was whether or not the Chiefs dude is the best kicker in the NFL.
I think he's one of. I think there's definitely some guys up there. I think highly of Jake Elliott, Tucker, obviously, and Butker. I think those guys are really, really good.
What is the proper answer to that question? No, I'm the best kicker in the NFL. Thanks for asking. Last season, Harrison was nails, 33 of 35 on his field goals, so nearly 94%, and was perfect. In fact, he's a great fantasy football play. He was perfect from beyond 50 yards. Only had 6 of them, but he made them all, which is humongous. And this is a dude who's been doing it since the very beginning, because in his first NFL game, when he first joined the league and joined the Chiefs, 4 seconds left on the clock, he hit a long field goal to give Kansas City a win. So they rely on him in these clutch situations, and he generally comes through. So congratulations to Harrison. Seriously, we're keeping track of how much kickers make per year. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. If blank were an Olympic sport, you would capture gold every single time at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page as well. And I'll try to work in a few more for the top of the hour. But since the Olympics are ongoing the rest of this week, I feel like this is a question that we can recycle even on our hump show. Speaking of the Olympics, gymnastics are now done. Simone Biles walks away with 3 gold and a silver that she won in floor exercise on Monday. She actually fell off the balance beam, as did Suni Lee in the finals on beam. Most of the top contenders ended up falling off or having some kind of a big bobble. And so that competition was won by a surprise gymnast from Italy. In fact, 2 Italians who were on the podium for the balance beam. But in floor exercise, despite a couple of times where she stepped out of bounds, Simone was able to capture 1 last silver. She has now 11 total medals from the Olympics. So going back to Rio, would you believe that when it comes to world championships and Olympics, U.S. championships combined, she now is the winner of 41 medals in her gymnastics career?
I've accomplished way more than my wildest dreams, not just at this Olympics, but in the sport. So I can't be mad at my performances. A couple years ago, I didn't think I'd be back here at an Olympic Games. So competing and then walking away with 4 medals, I'm not mad about it. I'm pretty proud of myself, and it's always so exciting to compete.
So she certainly looked like she was having a lot of fun. The freedom, the joy, just the gratefulness to be back out there. And that's something that can empower humans. Of course, athletes, when they're playing freely, when they're competing with joy, it just makes it that much better. It's so much easier to navigate and handle pressure when you are doing what you love and when you recognize what a blessing it is to be able to do it. And both she and Suni Lee in that situation, after having the sport and their ability to compete kind of taken away from them for a while. So yeah, it's really fun to see Team USA, even those who weren't competing in the event finals, cheering on one another. Jordan Chiles ends up with the bronze after an inquiry is lodged. Essentially, it's a petition by her coaches. She said she didn't even know about it. Her score initially came up. She was 4th on the floor exercise. And unbeknownst to her, her coaches had lodged an inquiry with the judges, meaning they felt like she deserved an extra 1/10 of a point for an element that they hadn't included in her start value. And she found out, we all found out at the same time, including the Romanian gymnast who got bumped to 4th and off the podium. She, of course, cried, and I felt terrible for her, but Jordan kind of lost her mind and went running around past the floor mats and ends up on the ground. Her coach lifts her back up, and the whole place was kind of crazy. Even Tom Brady had a expression on his face when they caught him on camera. So that was kind of fun. And boy, the celebrities there to watch the gymnastics competition. So those are now done. But Team USA, terrific in what they accomplished. I don't know when we will see them again, but they definitely deserve a break after this last, week and a half of grinding.
Definitely a redemption tour. I mean, I think personally, Team USA did such an amazing job out here on the gymnastics floor. There's nothing left. We did our job. You know what I'm saying? It's hard, but we did it.
Love it. I love, again, her joy and their happiness, their excitement, their support of one another. It was a highly successful Olympics for both the men's and women's gymnastics teams. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Kevin Durant and Team USA still have some big challenges ahead of them. In fact, they compete within 12 hours in Paris, so back on the court against Brazil. But Kevin Durant and a lot of the NBA players who were there and competing for Team USA, the swimmers, I don't think I saw the gymnastics team there. I could be wrong. But there was this massive party at the Team USA house on Monday, and a lot of the basketball players were there, including Kevin Durant, who then caught up with Maria Taylor.
Got to see Simone up close, which was fun. Went to support our women's 3-on-3 basketball. So I got out to do a couple other things besides play ball and just exploring Paris in general, one of my favorite cities in the world. You know, so I'm excited to be here.
So Kevin Durant able to catch Simone. Now they're on a first name basis, KD and Simone. But yeah, it was neat to see the basketball team there supporting the gymnasts as well. And as I say, they play this afternoon, Eastern time, 3:30 Eastern time, 12:30 Pacific time. It's a big deal now because this is knockout stage and every team is talented. Not as deep as Team USA, but every team is talented and Steph Curry knows that for sure.
Everybody has to be ready for your moment whenever it is, and I think that's it's a challenge because, again, you don't know from quarter to quarter, from game to game, who it's going to be. And yeah, it's a fun way to play if you're bought into, like, let's just win the basketball game. After that, who cares what it looks like? It's easier said than done because we're all not used to that, but it's a fun way to play, especially for this six-game stretch that we're trying to win a gold medal.
Yeah, how about this? 3 games in 5 days. That's what it will take. 3 wins in 5 days. That's what it will take to capture the 5th straight gold for Team USA in the Olympics. And it starts today, 3:30 Eastern time in the quarterfinals against Brazil. I know there are 4 basketball games today. They're already underway if you want to watch them live on either Peacock or USA. Kevin Durant will remain a bench guy. I was going to say a bench warmer, but that's not fair. He'll remain a bench player. So he'll be coming off the bench. They're going to stick with the formula and they're really leaning into their identity. But as Steph points out, in search of his first gold medal, there are a lot of different guys who can step up. All right. On the next edition of the show tonight, our Hump Show will bring back some of your terrific answers, but find us at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. If blank were an Olympic sport, I would capture gold every time. For me, it's talking. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom! Give Kansas City a win. So they rely on him in these clutch situations, and he generally comes through. So congratulations to Harrison. Seriously, we're keeping track of how much kickers make per year. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. If blank were an Olympic sport, you would capture gold every single time at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page as well. And I'll try to work in a few more for the top of the hour. But since the Olympics are ongoing the rest of this week, I feel like this is a question that we can recycle even on our Hump Show. Speaking of the Olympics, gymnastics are now done. Simone Biles walks away with 3 gold and a silver that she won in floor exercise on Monday. She actually fell off the balance beam, as did Suni Lee in the finals on beam. Most of the top contenders ended up falling off or having some kind of a big bobble. And so that competition was won by a surprise gymnast from Italy. In fact, 2 Italians who were on the podium for the balance beam. But in floor exercise, despite a couple of times where she stepped out of bounds, Simone was able to capture 1 last silver. She has now 11 total medals from the Olympics. So going back to Rio, would you believe that when it comes to world championships and Olympics, U.S. championships combined, she now is the winner of 41 medals in her gymnastics career?
I've accomplished way more than my wildest dreams, not just at this Olympics, but in the sport. So I can't be mad at my performances. A couple years ago, I didn't think I'd be back here at an Olympic game. So competing and then walking away with 4 medals, I'm not mad about it. I'm pretty proud of myself. And it's always so exciting to compete.
So she certainly looked like she was having a lot of fun. The freedom, the joy, just the gratefulness to be back out there. And that's something that can empower humans. Of course, athletes, when they're playing freely, when they're competing with joy, it just makes it that much better. It's so much easier to navigate and handle pressure when you are doing what you love and when you recognize what a blessing it is to be able to do it. And both she and Suni Lee in that situation, after having the sport and their ability to compete kind of taken away from them for a while. So yeah, it's really fun to see Team USA, even those who weren't competing in the event finals, cheering on one another. Jordan Chiles ends up with the bronze after an inquiry is lodged. Essentially, it's a petition by her coaches. She said she didn't even know about it. Her score initially came up. She was 4th on the floor exercise And unbeknownst to her, her coaches had lodged an inquiry with the judges, meaning they felt like she deserved an extra tenth of a point for an element that they hadn't included in her start value. And she found out, we all found out at the same time, including the Romanian gymnast who got bumped to fourth and off the podium. She, of course, cried, and I felt terrible for her, but Jordan kind of lost her mind and went running around past the floor mats and ends up on the ground. Her coach lifts her back up, and the whole place was kind of crazy. Even Tom Brady had a expression on his face when they caught him on camera. So that was kind of fun. And boy, the celebrities there to watch the gymnastics competition. So those are now done. But Team USA, terrific in what they accomplished. I don't know when we will see them again, but they definitely deserve a break after this last, week and a half of grinding.
Definitely a redemption tour. I mean, I think personally, Team USA did such an amazing job out here on the gymnastics floor. There's nothing left. We did our job. You know what I'm saying? It's hard, but we did it.
Love it. I love, again, her joy and their happiness, their excitement, their support of one another. It was a highly successful Olympics for both the men's and women's gymnastics teams. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Kevin Durant and Team USA still have some big challenges ahead of them. In fact, they compete within 12 hours in Paris, so back on the court against Brazil. But Kevin Durant and a lot of the NBA players who were there and competing for Team USA, the swimmers, I don't think I saw the gymnastics team there. I could be wrong. But there was this massive party at the Team USA house on Monday, and a lot of the basketball players were there, including Kevin Durant, who then caught up with Maria Taylor.
Got to see Simone up close, which was fun. Went to support our women's 3-on-3 basketball. So I got out to do a couple other things besides play ball and just exploring Paris in general, one of my favorite cities in the world. You know, so I'm excited to be here.
So Kevin Durant able to catch Simone. Now they're on a first name basis, KD and Simone. But yeah, it was neat to see the basketball team there supporting the gymnasts as well. And as I say, they play this afternoon, Eastern time, 3:30 Eastern time, 12:30 Pacific time. And it's a big deal now because this is knockout stage and every team is talented. Not as deep as Team USA, but every team is talented and Steph Curry knows that for sure.
Everybody has to be ready for your moment whenever it is, and I think that's it's a challenge because, again, you don't know from quarter to quarter, from game to game, who it's going to be. And yeah, so it's a fun way to play if you're bought into, like, let's just win the basketball game. After that, who cares what it looks like? It's easier said than done because we're all not used to that, but it's a fun way to play, especially for this 6-game stretch that we're trying to win a gold medal.
Yeah, how about this? 3 games in 5 days. That's what it will take. 3 wins in 5 days. That's what it will take to capture the 5th straight gold for Team USA in the Olympics. And it starts today, 3:30 Eastern time in the quarterfinals against Brazil. I know there are 4 basketball games today. They're already underway if you want to watch them live on either Peacock or USA. Kevin Durant will remain a bench guy. I was going to say a bench warmer, but that's not fair. He'll remain a bench player. So he'll be coming off the bench. They're going to stick with the formula and they're really leaning into their identity. But as Steph points out, in search of his first gold medal, there are a lot of different guys who can step up. All right. On the next edition of the show tonight, our hump show, we'll bring back some of your terrific answers, but find us at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. If blank were an Olympic sport, I would capture gold every time. For me, it's talking. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!